and say, listen, I got this communication device. I put it next to my head all the day. Maybe it could be doing something to me. Someone does a study, says, no, it doesn't. I go, oh, okay, now I don't have to be worried about it.
Well, well said. And I guess if anyone out there would like to, you know, learn more about skepticism, why not come to Skeptics in the Pub tonight? It's at 7:30 at the Railway Club, right here in Vancouver.
As we all know, there's nothing that promotes reason better than a good drink.
Exactly. It's the last one of this of the year, so come by and check it out. Anything else, guys?
Does anyone have any? I'm calling up my calendar.
I've got the only thing I've really got is there's two little things. One, there's a Davis Suzuki Legacy Lecture. It's a fundraiser. It's being held December 10th at the Chan Center here at UBC. Now, granted, it's a fundraiser, so they want a bit of money. So $100, $75, $50 is what they're asking for. If you can't afford that, December 10th is Human Rights Day, and Amnesty International is trying to hold a write-a-thon where you write in to help promote rights and the victimization of criminals in that in other parts. You can check that out at www.writeathon.ca.
My calendar is not working right now, but there's a talk coming up next week or the week after at UBC, I believe, and it's all about your rights as an individual during the Olympics. There's a lot of talk about what right do you have to protest, where, how, what right security has to take away your camera or your liberties and things like that. There'll be a public information seminar at UBC sometime next week.
All right, well, we're out of time, so this is Ethan, your free-thinking historian, saying goodnight.
This is Don saying eyes open, minds on.
This is Rob saying have a good afternoon and goo keep warm.
UBC Rec is everything that is recreation on campus. No matter how you play, UBC Rec is your resource for fun activities. This student program is operated by over 140 volunteers, and it is the largest intramural recreation organization in Canada. Programs cover fitness, instructional classes, outdoor recreation, drop-in sports, special events, small tournaments, and intramural leagues. All the registration information is available in the Student Recreation Center or online at rec.ubc.ca. UBC Rec, how do you play?
Play is an international humanitarian organization using sport and play programs to encourage the healthy physical, social, and emotional development of the world's most disadvantaged children. RTP at UBC is run by a team of committed university students who advocate sport for development, and it is the first university chapter of its kind. We want you to get involved. Together, we can educate students about sport for development, help raise money, and teach children here in the Lower Mainland about the importance of sport and a healthy lifestyle. So check us out at www.interchange.ubc.ca/RTPUBC.
Yo, this is Mick Levin, and you're listening to Wiener's Barbecue on CITR. We'll be right back.
to scribe. Feel so mesmerized. All that inside. A sunshine pours, the daylight's out on me. Chasing shadows, moonlight mystery. Heading for the home alone. Driving on a dirty road.
Everybody, welcome to Wiener's Barbecue on 101.9 FM, CITR Radio, Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada, every Tuesday from 4:30 to 6 p.m. It is cold out there. The free thinkers before me, the last guy to talk there, he had it dead on. My lips are chapped. And I'm wearing these thin pants. They're just not doing it for me. Jacket's too cold. I do have a toque, though. Bald-headed guy. We know what to do. We know what to do. I've got a toque on. Lots to get into on the show. In about 10 minutes' time, we're going to jump into a little UBC Thunderbird men's basketball. But we're also going to be talking to this individual, Vern Knopp, assistant coach for the team, who comes on quite often with me. We're also going to be getting into that Tim Donaghy interview or that he did on 60 Minutes. I don't know if you saw it, but he basically said all those things you were always thinking about the NBA with regards to favoritism to players and such. And, you know, this is the Donaghy is the official who, of course, bet on games. He's in jail. We're going to save it, but it was quite the interview. On 60 Minutes on the weekend, so we'll hear what Vern Knopp has to say about that, and of course we'll get into UBC Thunderbirds men's basketball. A perfect 7-0 going into the break. They are currently ranked number one team in the country, so we'll talk to Vern about that. Tim Donaghy. Yeah, I did have that name right. Good for me. Also get into, I don't know what the 5-10 slot. We'll get into UBC Thunderbird men's hockey. They had a couple big games on the weekend, pretty much had to sweep the Calgary Dinos to maintain their playoff, to really have a realistic shot at making the playoffs. They got a split. We'll be talking about that at about 5-10. 5:30. Jump into a UBC team that is just doing absolutely fantastic over the first half of the season. We're talking the women's volleyball team, a perfect 9-0 record to start the year. But what's almost even more impressive than that record, they've got a number one ranking, two-time defending national champions. In those nine games, it's best 3 out of 5 sets. In their 9 matches, they have only lost 2 sets up to this point through that. Say the Christmas holiday point of the season. Liz Cordonnier from the UBC Thunderbird women's basketball team will be with us. Music to start off the show. If you ever do listen to me, I am a fan of the band Phish, and they Halloween show, October 31st. That was a rendition of Exile on Main Street, Rocks Off, Rolling Stones song. They played that album cover to cover. So I opened with that today. Okay. Songs rocks off. But the big story going on here in the UBC Thunderbirds sports department is the head coach of football. Of course, Ted Gavaya released about a month ago now. So UBC in a hunt for their next head coach. A couple weeks ago, we had Dan Elliott on, former Vanier Cup winner of the 97 UBC team, also covers Canada West football for the Canada West. Last week, we had Julio Caravata of the BC Lions radio network on with us. He, at the Grey Cup, talked to some people. Here's really the situation and what I've been able to gather with what's going on with the UBC Thunderbird head coach football position. Obviously, this is a program that really, since, as Dan Elliott said with me 2 weeks ago, ever since two coaches got into a fight at Pyar Square, the head coach at the time, Dave Johnson, assistant coach Noel Thorpe, led to Dave Johnson's firing, this program has really gone, you know, down. I mean, that was the obvious turning point of this franchise, of this program, I should say. And, you know, you're looking at a situation where 97 Vanier Cup champions, 98, they were an excellent team, 99 lost in the Hardy Cup final at home, the conference championship to Saskatchewan. Since then, they have not won a playoff game, okay? I mean, and Dave Johnson got fired before the 99 season. They have not won a playoff game this decade. They are going to go the entire 2000 to 2009 without winning a playoff game. They've had 3 head coaches. Jay Prepchuk couldn't get it done. Lou Delorier came in, couldn't get it done. Ted Gavaya, the latest tragedy. Here's the story. Next Wednesday, they're going to be interviewing 4 people. That's the number I'm getting. They're going to be interviewing 4 finalists for their head coaching position, and they hope to have an answer. They hope to have the position filled by Christmas. Jacques Chapdelaine, PC Lions offensive coordinator, he was rumored to be one of the people up for this job. I am told he is no longer in the running for the head coaching job of UBC football. Gary Echeverry, defensive coordinator for the Saskatchewan Rough Riders, Grey Cup losing team, top defense in the CFL, also was rumored to be one of the people in running for this job. His name, apparently, no longer a part of that list. Adam Rita is apparently in the mix here to be the next head coach of UBC Thunderbird men's football, former BC Lion head coach, of course. I think he was. Dino Jeremiah, the defensive coordinator for UBC, you know, last year, current acting interim head coach, if you will. He's also apparently going to be one of the 4 finalists, I'm told. And then there's the heavy favorite, and I actually talked to him last night on the phone, Sean Olson, offensive coordinator for SFU, the last winning quarterback for the UBC Thunderbird men's football team. He was that quarterback in 1999. Sean Olson was also their quarterback when they won the Vanier Cup. talk to Sean Olson. And you know, I talked to Bob Phillip about it, Howard Seymour of the Vancouver Province. He's done the same. From what we've gathered from talking to Bob Phillip and what I'm hearing, Sean Olson will be the next head coach of UBC men's football. I've talked to people and been told that if Sean Olson is not announced as the next head coach, it'll be an absolute shock. I think he's a great fit to be the next head coach of the UBC Thunderbird men's football team. I think he's the only fit to be the next skipper of this club. I talked to Sean Olson on the phone last night. He didn't want to come on, and here's really what he had to say. Dave Johnson, who's now the head coach at SFU, of course, Sean Olson's former coach here at UBC, Dave Johnson, totally behind Sean Olson going and trying to become the next head coach at UBC. However, this is I was hoping to talk to somebody from the UBC Athletic Department today. I couldn't get a hold of anybody. I assume this doesn't mean much, but Sean Olson, I talked to some people. It's Wednesday, December 16th. That is going to be the day they interview these four head coaches for the four potential head coaches for the job. Sean Olson currently has not been told that he is going to be one of those four. Now, that probably doesn't mean anything, but that, you know, that's what he said. And he's excited. I mean, I talked to him on the phone yesterday and basically said, if I don't get the job, you know, I've got a great position here at SFU. You know, I'm the offensive coordinator. We're going NCAA. He's actually scheduled to go on a recruiting trip to Toronto, he told me, on that Wednesday. But he said, of course, if I can get this job at UBC, I mean, that would be absolutely amazing. So we're hoping, I'm hoping it's Sean Olson. The reason I think it should be Sean Olson, the reason I think it will be Sean Olson is Bob Phillip, when I talked to him, the athletic director here at UBC, when I talked to him on the phone, told me that he's got to get the alumni back involved here at UBC. That's something that has really disappeared here. And if you follow CIS football at all and know that late 90s UBC team, it's almost embarrassing. I think it was embarrassing for Bob Phillip. What happened is you would look at the SFU coaching staff. You had head coach Dave Johnson, former coach here, Lou DeLaurier, former coach here, Sean Olson, former Vanier Cup winning player here. That was the head coach, defensive and offensive coordinator. And then their assistants, the people helping out the program, were filled with late 90s former UBC players. I mean, they literally took that late 90s alumni. And now those guys found themselves helping SFU. Sean Olson, Bob Phillip told me he wants to get that late 90s alumni back involved. Okay. Bob Howard Samura, from talking with Bob Phillip, also deducted from that conversation, Sean Olson will be the next head coach. I think it would be great. And this is a guy who, in all my years covering UBC sports, in the male sports, the guy's sports, for the players on those teams, all of the teams, Sean Olson's the best leader as a player I have ever seen here at UBC. And, you know, it would just, there'd be some excitement around this program again. And I did talk to Sean Olson, and I will say this last thing. People here at UBC, I'm not saying Gavaya did it, but people here at UBC, you always hear these, I remember hearing it. Just these words being uttered is, it's real tough to coach here because the grades it takes in, the grades it takes for the kids to get in. You know, you hear that here at UBC, and I asked Sean Olson that, you know, last night when we were talking on the phone, and I said, Sean, you're not going to bitch about that if you're the coach. He's like, absolutely not. And he said, we won when I was there when that was the situation. I was a player. I was the quarterback on that team that won. We all had to have good grades to get in here, and we were able to do it. And that's the thing. I mean, it seems here at UBC lately with the football, it's been about making the playoffs, maybe eking in. But Sean Olson knows, and I believe he will surround himself with the people who know, a.k.a. late 90s alumni and coaches, that this program can not only be a Vanier Cup contender, can win the Vanier Cup. And, you know, they may only have 1 year to do it because it's possible 2011, UBC is going to be NCAA. We're going to save that for another day. But The point is, I think Sean Olson's the guy. And if this UBC program wants to become what UBC football was, he's the link. And he's the only link I think you're going to find. Howard Samura and I both agreed that if Sean Olson's not the link, if there's another guy out there, we don't know who it is. But we both, you know, Sean Olson is that link. And I honestly believe, you know, I'm hoping that if Sean Olson does get the job, I want to get sort of on the phone that day, Dave Johnson, the head coach at SFU, and I want to ask Dave Johnson this question. 10 years ago, I would ask him, 10 years ago, if you were told, 10 years from now, you would be the head coach at SFU coaching NCAA Division II, and your quarterback, Sean Olson, would be the head coach at UBC. Would you be happy with that scenario? I'm assuming he's going to say yes. I mean, you know, I'm going to ask that question because it almost closes the book on the infamous Pi R squared fight that really just instantly almost led to the downfall of this once powerful and proud football program. If you follow UBC sports and you follow, for instance, the men's basketball team, the men's football team was better than that basketball team is today. I mean, you look at this basketball team, you're like, there's no way they're ever going to fall by the wayside and be a non-playoff team in this conference. I mean, they're that good. The football team was better than that. And the reason I say that, no offense, Kevin Hansen, the basketball team, the football team won a Vanier Cup. You haven't won yet. You haven't won. They won. So it's remarkable. You just see these great programs in schools. You literally just think, there's no way they're ever going to fall. Well, this football team, they have fallen hard. 1-7 this year. They got two cheesy wins, which not even the athletic director thought was correct. They got two wins because SFU and Manitoba played ineligible players. And by the time the Manitoba one happened, the season was already over. They're out of the playoffs anyway, so I didn't even really dig into that one. But the SFU one, that player had no outcome on the game. And I thought that was a ridiculous ruling by the Canada West. Nonetheless, next week we're going to have Bob Phillip on the phone, I believe, the athletic director here at UBC. They're going to be interviewing, the word is, those four coaches on the Tuesday. So interested to see what Bob Phillip has to say. He's agreed to come on the show next week. Hopefully, I think he'll do it. But it'll be interesting what he has to say. So from what I've gathered, the four people being interviewed for that position next week, Sean Olson, who is my pick to get this job, Dino Jeremiah, assistant coach, defensive coordinator, who, you know, I heard also a little rumbling just from talking around with people that Dino Jeremiah might even end up, if he doesn't get this job, SFU might even inquire. I have no idea, though. Maybe I shouldn't say that. I've heard that, though, that he might end up going to SFU. Jacques Chapdelaine, Gary Echeverry, two people who were apparently very interested in this job. Just, I don't know much more than that. I never talked to them individually. Are apparently out applying for the UBC Thunderbird head coaching position. They are no longer involved. They're not going to be they're not going to be in that group of four. And Adam Rita, formerly of the BC Lions, now working for the Toronto Argonauts. We'll find out if he's one of the final four. His name apparently still in the mix here. Don't know who the fourth guy is. Hopefully we'll have some info. I don't know if Bob Phillip will be able to tell us this next week, but hopefully we'll have some info for you. Okay, so that's our report on UBC Thunderbird men's football. We are going to take a break. Then we're going to get into UBC Thunderbird men's basketball. Vern Knopp, the assistant coach of that team, is going to be with us. We're also going to talk to him and get his impressions of the Tim Donaghy interview on 60 Minutes on the weekend. You got to watch 60 Minutes. It's a very good show. I don't know. I'm done. Okay. You're listening to 101.9 FM CITR Radio, Vancouver, Canada.
Well, the party is off to a good start. Guests are on time. Everyone's out to have fun and to help others fun.
What's the matter? Doesn't that sound exciting to you?
UBC students have an alternative. Looking to unwind? Check out one of the sub's two licensed establishments.
The Gallery Lounge is your location for a wide variety of draft beers at student-friendly prices. Come to the gallery for a relaxed atmosphere and great food, including the famous pizza pretzel. fellow students provide the entertainment with weekly open mic and karaoke nights. The gallery is located on the main concourse of the sub and open Monday through Saturday till 1 a.m. This business is owned and operated by the AMS, your student society. All the things you've been seeing, guess you better find your way
back home. Sad. Talking about sports. I never thought I could feel so free. Flying away on a wing and a prayer. Who could it be? Believe it or not, it's just me. CITR Sports. Please listen.
Welcome, everybody, back to Winners Barbecue on 101.9 FM, CITR Radio, Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada. With us on the line, Vern, did I hear a dog barking in the background there?
That's my dog, Hurley, yep.
How's Hurley doing?
He's doing well, thanks.
There you go. There you go. Vern Knopp, assistant coach, UBC Thunderbird men's basketball team. Vern, 7-0, your team is to start the year, currently ranked number one in the country. We'll get into your team in a moment, but I want to start off getting your thoughts with the interview. You saw it on 60 Minutes? You set some time aside there?
Yep, I did.
Was it PVR'd or did you give, or you actually switched over from the Cardinals-Vikings game?
It was PVR'd, I'm not going to lie.
Okay, it was PVR'd. Tim Donaghy, the NBA referee, of course, who was actually went to jail for betting on basketball games, and he did this interview on 60 Minutes, obviously to promote his book. One of the more enlightening interviews I think you will see, Vern. This is a guy who went on 60 Minutes and said, I never fixed a game that I bet on. And your first thought is, that can't be true. And I remember watching the report when it came out by the NBA saying that they had actually done an investigation on Donaghy. They declared that he never threw a game that he ref, which I thought was ridiculous. They're probably just covering their own butts. But here's the story. He goes on 60 Minutes, says, I never threw a game. And he said, here's the story. I made a deal with the FBI. The FBI here, I would give them these two mobsters who, you know, I was helping make bets. And in return, you would knock my prison sentence down from 5 years to 1 year. If he was caught lying, he was going to jail for 5 years. Now, what I found just what was crazy about it, of course, is the FBI corroborated what he said, saying we investigated, we couldn't find that he threw the games. And here's how he said he made his money. And this is what's crazy. He said he was able to make his money, getting it right, 70 to 80% on the based on the following. He knew, for example, the name he gave that Allen Iverson was playing. And he knew that some refs liked Iverson, some refs hated Iverson. So he knew that if those refs were reffing the Iverson game, he was going to bet against Denver. Another example he gave, a memo came in from the NBA saying Kobe Bryant hasn't been getting foul calls. He knew, so give him some foul calls, I guess was the letter. He knew that the next games Kobe was playing, he would go to the line if he was breathed upon. So he bet on the Lakers. He said the NBA, which we have always suspected, wanted teams in big markets to make it to the finals. And then other examples he gave, and the word he used, which I thought was amazing, was he said how some refs and the NBA is out to get owners. And we all knew who he was talking about, Mark Cuban. Vern, this is a huge story, I think. We've always thought this about the NBA. Your thoughts on the Donaghy interview?
You know, it really was an eye-opener, to say the least. I mean, over the years, there's always been the conspiracy theories about the NBA. I go back to when Patrick Ewing was coming out of Georgetown, the next great player, and how they had the lottery, and New York's name was picked with almost like zero chance of getting it, where they said the envelope was so-called frozen so that Stern knew which one to get because they wanted the big name in the big market. You've heard those throughout the years, and Donaghy just kind of, you know, opened, I guess, another can of worms in regards to that. I guess the only word I can keep saying is just it was shocking. But in some ways, when it comes to the NBA, I'm kind of not surprised either.
Because, Vern, what Donaghy was basically saying was the NBA and the FBI both agree that I never fix games, right?
Yep.
But I was still able to pick the winner based on my inside information with how these games were going to be officiated, with the way the NBA culture works. I was able to get it right 70 to 80% of the time. Therefore, it almost proves that this is how the game is run.
Yeah, in some ways. I mean, you know, it's the human element, you know, where obviously it's well known certain referees, you know, don't like certain players. In fact, I remember listening to Vancouver Grizzlies games where certain referees didn't like that the announcers, Jay Triano and Don Poyer. They used to always get into arguments with them, kind of thing, and it's just human nature, I guess. You like some people, you don't like others, and obviously the referees at certain times got together and you know would punish. I think, you know, punish certain players, certain teams, I guess. You know, it's well been documented. Mark Cuban's, since he's been in the league, has had a lot of run-ins with not just the officials but the league head office, and has been fined ridiculous sums of money. And it's just something, you know, I think Donaghy just kind of proved Cuban's point, what he's been saying. I mean, he hasn't come out and exactly accused the NBA of that, but, you know, he's left hints, because if he says too much, he's obviously going to get fined, and it's really a shocking thing. But, you know, picking, obviously he knew what he was doing, because picking 75 to 80% right is unheard of. You know, and that's why officials regarding teams or NBA shouldn't be doing any gambling, because they have inside information regarding, even if it's just certain guys playing hurt or certain guys, you know, being sick or whatever. You just never know what's going on, and that's why those rules are in place, where you shouldn't be allowed to be gambling of not just in the NBA but other sports as well.
Yeah, obviously, you know, Donaghy, I don't even need to debate that, Byrne. What he did was wrong, but I think the big issue for me watching this interview was we have always suspected that this was going on in the NBA. And what about the one, though, that, you know, he said that the league wants those big market teams to make it deep in the playoffs, thus making, I mean, it doesn't take a genius to figure out why, thus getting higher TV ratings, more money for the league. He said that also. What do you think of that? Because, you know, you remember the Celtic-Laker final a couple years ago, and, you know, Dallas seems to always be complaining they get screwed by the refs in the playoffs. I mean, what do you think of that comment he made?
You know, you really don't want to believe those kind of things, but with the NBA, it just seems to always happen. Where, you know, it's like the Lakers this year. Like, the Lakers aren't, I can't see them losing this year. Like, they have, I mean, obviously they have such a great team, but when, I thought it's funny when Kobe ends up being the name of the league, like the big player of the league, since Jordan had left, suddenly he starts shooting, you know, double figures and free throws every night. He's going to get extra calls. I mean, sometimes it's, you know, Jordan used to get away with it all the time. They'd never call traveling. They'd just call sometimes touch. They'd do what they could to protect him because he's a star player. And you don't want to believe it's true, but I've had the thoughts in the past that sometimes, you know, it's one of the things why I don't follow the NBA anymore, because I just think sometimes it just seems like the outcomes, it's too predictable that certain teams are going to get calls down the stretch, and it, you know, more times than not, it seems to happen, I guess.
And a team you mentioned to me, Vern, you think has been getting, a.k.a. the screw treatment, you said the San Antonio Spurs, eh?
Yeah, you know, it's a team that, you know, they won a couple championships, but the ratings were so low because, you know, they're not a big market team. You know, part of that is, you know, San Antonio doesn't exactly play an exciting style, unless you're, of course, a Tim Duncan fan or Ginobili fan, but the last couple of years, when you have watched the game, it seems like they just, when they're playing the Lakers or some other big market team, they just don't seem to get those calls. which really, you know, it's something just to be thought. You know, it's something out there that, you know, I think someone has to maybe take a better look at.
So I think the NBA, what they're going to do here is, obviously they're not commenting, and they've pretty much said that already.
I think that's a huge mistake on their part. I mean,
really,
I think they're just hiding behind. They're just thinking it's just going to all blow over, and to some extent it has. If I were them on that show, maybe not go on that show, but they should have had done more to tell people that not just saying he's a rogue official, that if he's been doing it, what's to say other referees haven't? What's to say other league employees haven't? Who knows what's going on there, right? I think they should come out public and you know, at least state their case, so to speak.
They mentioned Allen Iverson. You think he was smiling, and they showed that one game when he was playing for Denver, an example that Donahue gave where he was getting absolutely mugged in the lane. No fouls are being called on him. Said how, you know, that was the player he brought up. Some refs love him, some refs hate him. He knew when those refs that were, you know, against him were reffing. And apparently, I think what it was, he had threatened a referee. The league didn't suspend him, so the refs got together and said, we're going to get Iverson. So he bet against Denver. You think Iverson was smiling when he saw that report come out?
Oh, I think he had to be, because, you know, he was in a situation where, you know, it's as a player or a coach or even an owner in that league, you speak out, you automatically, it hits your pocketbook, right? And no question, Iverson had to be smiling on that. And it's really disappointing to hear that people would actually get together, referees, and affect the outcome, not just to screw the player, but to affect the outcome of a basketball game as well.
Vern, I know you got to watch what you say here, but you know, this is something you see also in CIS basketball. And I will go back to your national championship final game versus Carleton, where Carleton had a lot of play. And I was talking to the officials about this at the bar after the game, Vern. And a lot of the Carleton players were on the floor with two fouls late in the first half. And just from watching, you know, my whole thing I was saying was, for the amount of guys they had on the floor, for the amount of minutes they were on the floor, it was almost impossible for not one of them to pick up a third foul in that stretch. You guys took out Josh White with two personal fouls. I think it was late in the first quarter. Mm-hmm. It almost seemed that if you had kept Josh White on the floor with the way they were treating the Carleton players, he might have been protected there. That might have just been the way those guys were calling that game that day. Nonetheless, I don't know what you could say, but I saw something like that happen in the CIS National Final last year.
Yeah, you know, it's just something that, you know, our coaches, we did discuss it. We felt the Carleton player, it wasn't just a couple of their players that had two personal fouls. It was their three best players. There were their two best players that had two fouls early. And next thing you know, they were even allowed to play more aggressive and get away with a few more things. And you know, it's something with Josh, we felt, you know, if I can recall correctly, one of his two fouls I thought was just even a phantom call at that. But with that said, I mean, did the officiating affect the outcome of the game? No, it didn't. Ultimately, it was in our hands, and, you know, we were up early in the first half, and we just couldn't execute in the second half and basically keep rebounding, and that was the biggest problem in our game. But it's something that, it as a coach or a player, even as a former player, certain things can drive you nuts. You feel that, you know, there is certain players have preferential treatment out there, and it can be frustrating at times.
And then, you know, the other one that, you know, where I think it's actually okay, the two instances I think it's okay, I think if a guy's going for a winning shot at the end of the game, you better make sure he's fouled. That's the one thing I have. And the other one I do agree with, Vern, is if it is a star player, to have him foul out of the game, make sure it's an absolute foul. Those are the two instances I have where maybe refs can sort of go a vague line there.
Yeah, I would agree. And I think for the most part, the referees, at least the elite officials, they kind of know who the best player is. And I think they would probably tell you that for them to foul out a team's top player, that it will have to be, not a cheesy call or a cheap call. It's got to be a warranted call. And you know, basketball, I've officiated games in the past when I was younger, and it's a tough game to officiate. I mean, they don't have an easy job, and I remember going to the NBA games and trying to officiate those games. It's officiate any pro sport or any sport, I believe, I think is so tough, because the athletes are just so, the level of play, the speed at which they play is so tough. But I think the top officials, for the most part, do a really good job. But I, you know, as far as the NBA goes, I'd like to see them do a better job. We're not quite give have so much leeway because, I mean, I think it does hurt the integrity of the game in at the NBA level anyway.
Well, I mean, it comes back to it. I think the big story here is A, the officials getting together and, you know, the Donaghy knowing that if such and such is reffing the game, they're not going to, I don't know if he was saying win or lose, but they're not going to cover the spread. And then the other one is league directives saying give Kobe some calls here. And, you know, the big one is that Donaghy said big market teams advancing in the playoffs. Because and the sad thing with this, Vern, is this is something people have always said, and this is something people have always thought in the back of their minds. And this is just another instance where it looks like this is actually happening in the NBA.
Yeah, and that was my biggest disappointment or shock that I heard from that Donaghy interview was the fact that it's the league directive telling referees how to referee a game or to give certain players certain calls and whatnot. I mean, I believe they should watch video and make those decisions themselves, but for the league just to say specifically you got to give certain players calls. Like, I'm all for, like, in hockey, protecting your star players or someone cheap shots a Sidney Crosby or Alex Ovechkin, you know, I think the punishment should be more severe than it would be an average player, just because those are the guys that people are coming to pay to see. And I think the NBA, I was just really disappointed hearing that their league directive is maybe for other reasons, especially trying to make series go, you know, six or seven games so the NBA can make extra money. If that allegation is true, it's very disheartening, really.
Because it's not surprising, though, is it? That, I think, is the real scary thing here.
Yeah, nothing he said really surprised. I mean, I was shocked, but at the same time, when I thought about it, you know, just in discussions with friends, and you and I talked about it before, about sometimes with the NBA, you really have to wonder, like, I mean, I watch all sports, but it just seems like the NBA in particular compared to other sports, really, the league really has an influence on how the outcome of games are affected, for sure.
What happened to the NBA here? I mean, I was talking to you about it yesterday. I mean, when I first started, it was the late 80s, and, you know, you had the Bird Magic teams going at it. You had that Pistons team. You had Karl Malone and Stockton going. You had the young Jordan and Pippen Bulls team. You had Patrick Ewing on the Knicks. You had Charles Barkley on the 76ers. Olajuwon and on the Rockets. You had Drexler's Trailblazers. I mean, it was a great league, and it seemed... Well, it really, for me, went downhill as soon as the Jordan retired. But, I mean, was it just the case with the NBA, when we're starting to look back at it, that it caught lightning in a bottle there with Bird and Magic and then into Jordan for about a, you know, 7-8 year, 10-15 year stretch, and now it's just sort of trying to fabricate that ever since? I mean, what do you think here? What's happened to the NBA?
I think you kind of nailed it on the head there. Really, the NBA was in serious financial ruin until Bird and Magic stepped out onto the court, and they had that famous NCAA basketball final where Magic's team beat Bird's Indiana team, and...
Indiana State,
yeah. And then they went to the NBA and just became instant rivals. And the 80s is all about the Celtics. And, well, the early part of the early to mid-80s is all about the Celtics and Lakers. And then you know, they Jordan came along just at the perfect time to take them to that next level with the marketing with Nike and Air Jordan and all that. And since then, I think they've just been trying to relive that, trying to anoint the next Jordan, which the NBA can't really do. I mean, Jordan just kind of did it on his own kind of thing to be that next player. And you know, Kobe Bryant is a pretty good guy to market your team, or LeBron is as well, but it just seems like the integrity, just the level of play, I think, for the NBA is not nowhere near it. I mean, everyone says there's way more superstars now, and I think that's just the media making these guys out to be great superstars. I just don't think there is a Jordan or a Bird and Magic out there right now. With that said, I mean, I enjoy watching LeBron and Kobe play, but it just seems the way that it's officiated now, they have too much say as far as shooting free throws. I mean, you watch Jordan in his early days when he was trying to beat the Pistons, the abuse he would actually take, like, he had to earn every single point. Jordan, in today's NBA, with his ability, he'd be probably averaging 40 a game, no problem.
Yeah, and then, you know, you look at this sort of the last thing on the NBA. When did it become a – I think what you're saying is the game's not – the athletes are better, but the fundamentals aren't there. And I think we've seen that when the United States has played as a team and suddenly they play Greece and lose. I think we kind of see it come to a head there where that dream team that first dream team, no way that would have happened. But when did it become a – when did the fundamentals start to go? And then the other question is, I mean, the one people – because – if you want to find a city where people talk bad about the NBA, it is Vancouver. And the one that a guy I was with brought up, and I remember it happening too, he said, when I really stopped following the NBA, the Grizzlies have left, was when Tracy McGrady demanded out of Toronto so he could go somewhere and be the man, because Vince Carter was the man in Toronto, and he wanted to go somewhere and be the man. I mean, that's sort of an instance where James Worthy never did that with Magic. You know, when did this start to happen?
Yeah, and, you know, I think really the number one is when they started to make all that money.
Yeah.
Magic, Jordan, Bird, those guys didn't play for the money. I mean, Jordan was underpaid his entire career until his last 2-3 years where he finally said, you know what, it's time to get my money from after what I've given to you guys. And then, I mean, I think he was receiving something like $25 million a year for his last couple of years. But prior to that, he was well underpaid. And today's, a lot of those guys played 3-4 years of college. And nowadays you're getting guys coming right out of high school. I still remember the first year when Stephon Marbury, who played 1 year, and Kevin Garnett were with Minnesota. They did an interview with Bob Costas. And it was just one of the worst interviews I've ever seen. You could actually see Bob Costas struggling to get answers out of these guys but they were just so young and immature. And I think that's what happens so much with the NBA. You get these guys that just, they get thrown all this money and celebrity lifestyle, and it's about the money. It's not about basketball anymore.
Yeah, because I actually remember reading, and it didn't even surprise you at the time, where Magic would take a pay cut so they could go out and sign a guy and stay under the cap. I remember reading that, too.
Yeah, I mean, those guys did it all. Well, and that's why Jordan took all the less money, because he wanted to keep guys like Scottie Pippen and you know, Steve Kerr and Tony Kukoc and all those guys. He wanted those guys around because he knew he couldn't win a championship on his own, and that's what he did. And the only place I think you really see that now is you still see it a little bit in the NHL, where guys like Sidney Crosby took less money than he could have got. Also, you hear in the NBA, Peyton Manning, Tom Brady, the great quarterbacks have all been willing to take less money or take pay cuts every other year just so they can stay under the salary cap to help sign some of their top players. And you almost never hear that in sports in general these days, at least especially in the NBA.
Yeah. Vern Knopp with us, assistant coach UBC. Thanks for that, Vern. Very much appreciated. But we still do have to talk about your team.
That's what I'm more happy talking about, that's for sure.
There you go. I thought that Donahue one got me. Vern, you guys 7-0 to start the year, number one ranked team in the country right now. I guess the one thing you can question with your team is you've got three of your seven, almost half of your wins are against teams that are winless this season. Two against Thompson Rivers, one against the University of Winnipeg. Even talking to some of the players on your team, they don't believe you guys have been really tested yet. I'm told the schedule gets much more difficult the second half of the year. Your analysis of the team through the first 7 games of the year going into the Christmas break.
Well, I think the best thing to say is we showed up and is all we can do is play the team that's in front of us on the schedule. And to a credit to our players, no matter who we've played, we've been able to come out and win. You know, I've heard that all year long that we haven't been tested in the preseason. We hadn't been tested. A lot of people questioned our number two ranking to start the year that we're based it on last year, saying that we haven't replaced Chris Dick. Where I think we have replaced Chris Dick as far as in house, where Josh White has really become our go to guy, our leader. With that said, I agree totally with the players that we haven't even come close to where we need to be. And I think the good thing is we all realize it. No one's talking about even our record as far as internally about, oh, we're 7-0, we don't need to work at it. Like, the guys are all, you know, we know we haven't peaked yet and we have to get better. And, you know, we're going to get tested again. I know Calgary's pretty coming in, or we're going there in January, and that's, everybody's got that circled on their thing. But, you know, like I said, we just focus on ourselves, and whoever we have to play on Friday, Saturday, we just try to go out and get the win for us.
Yeah, Vern, it really seems, just looking at your schedule, you mentioned that Calgary game that you play in Calgary January 23rd, And really from right there, you take on an SFU team right after that that is probably the surprise of the Canada West this season. And you get Victoria coming to town, and then you finish up against Trinity Western. I mean, you get a cream puff schedule to start, but really by the end of January, heading into the playoffs, it really picks right up. And you got to say, from a scheduling standpoint, that's got to be a good thing for your team, where suddenly right at the end of the year, things get really tough.
Well, I think it's a good thing, but with that say, I wouldn't say our schedule to start the first half has been a cream puff. Trinity was preseason top 10 when we played them. No one expected us to. In fact, people were already saying that they were going to be the team to finally knock us off the perch in Canada West, or at least in the Pacific Division. Saskatchewan, a team that came in, they were preseason top 10. They've had a few losses since they lost us, but they've had a tough schedule. I mean, they were a pretty talented team we played. With that said, no one thought SFU would be off to such a good start. Now they're basically, I believe, in second place. We still have to play them twice. We do want a competitive schedule. And looking ahead to play SFU, to play Calgary, again against Trinity, those are the games that are going to make us better, are going to get us ready for the playoffs, and then those playoff games will get us ready for hopefully the Canada West Final Four and then on to Nationals.
Is that something you're talking about right now, though, is make sure you do the way the schedule's set up? And I've told you this, Vern, I hate the schedule.
Yeah.
It is. Have you figured out if they're on acid or ecstasy yet, or mushrooms?
No, I haven't. I haven't asked any questions. The decision was made, and it's not going to be changed now. So whether we like it or not, we have to just got to play the team next on our schedule. And you know what? We're not even looking ahead to playing Calgary or anybody. It's our first two games back is Regina and Brandon, and right now that's our focus right now.
See, Vern, last time I talked to you, I said they might be, it looks like they were on. I'm not accusing of them, but it appeared that they were on ecstasy or acid. I'm going to add mushrooms to the mix this time.
Well, you can add whatever ingredients you want. I don't know how they came to that decision. But what are you going to do? There's no point complaining about it because it is what it is.
Yeah, I can complain, though.
You can complain all you want. You do a good job of doing that.
It's a terrible... I mean, Vern, three games, not only just three home games the first half of the year, three games that a fan of your team could go see, because there was no game in Victoria, who you're not traveling to this year, no game at Trinity, where you're not traveling this year, and no game at SFU. I mean, we're talking... In the past, you're looking at least 8, 9, maybe even up to 10 or 11 games a fan of your team can go see that first half of the year. This season, only 3. That's bad, any way you cut it.
Yeah, it is. And a lot of our close fans and alumni have expressed a disappointment at the schedule. I mean, obviously, playing at Victoria is always a popular. We get a lot of people to go over there to support us. But what can we do? We just got to focus on getting ready and getting better for our first two home games to start the new year.
Yeah, and Vern, I talked to you last time. We mentioned the play of Nathan Yu for the first half of the season. Josh White obviously this guy might even... Do you think Josh White does have a chance at being the National Player of the Year this year even?
If he keeps playing the way he has been, no question. Now it's going to be kind of hard for him because there's a few more teams out in the East but it's always a tough situation because not everybody in the country is going to see him. Although that said, a lot of people saw him play at Nationals last year where I thought he played very, extremely well for us. He just got to keep doing what he's doing and hopefully he'll get some he'll get some rewards by being at least nominated for it anyway.
And Vern, just last thing, we went over it player by player last time I talked to you, but the big men on this team, the statistics for these guys aren't there. The minutes are being spread around. But second half of the year when things get going, are you guys as a coaching staff looking for some of these big men to establish themselves as the guys, who are really going to be on the floor going forward down the clutch and down the stretch of the season?
Yeah, we're just really looking. I mean, ideally we'd love one or two guys to step up and become those leaders for us. But at the same time, the statistics don't tell the whole story of what they do. Graham Bath has his numbers. You look at his numbers, not probably great, but what people don't understand is that the kind of work he puts in. It's the grunt work. It's the non-glamorous stuff. He's diving on the floor for loose balls. He's playing tough defense. you don't walk across our key without bumping into Graham, and Graham just wears guys down and grinds games out for us, and really is an unsung, unheralded player. You know, it's kind of like, you know, in football where the Colts are always saying, oh, they can't run the football. They're like 30th in the league. But then you look at their, you know, their running back is, their running in the red zone is one of the top teams in the league as far as, you know, production is. And I kind of like to look at our big guys doing that too. They're doing a lot of the dirty work for us and, you know, not putting up the huge numbers, which I still think some of them can. But it's, you know, they're doing a great job and they're working hard. And so, you know, I don't have any complaints with them at all.
There you go. Vern Knopp, assistant coach of UBC men's basketball, talking a little Tim Donaghy and the NBA, a little UBC basketball. Vern, the team's going to Hawaii. You're not.
Nope. Thanks for reminding me.
There you go. Vern, thanks so much for doing this. We'll talk to you again soon.
Thanks, Daryl.
Okay, that was Vern Knopp, assistant coach of UBC men's basketball. Yeah, I will say that, you know, UBC men's basketball, first off, I've 7 games, 3 games, home games. I can't really get into it right now, even. It's really too bad. But that, go find on the internet somewhere Tim Donaghy, the NBA's referee's interview on 60 Minutes. I know this is a convicted felon saying these things, but yeah, I do recommend you go check it out. Okay, everybody, we are going to take a break. When we're back, we're going to get into a little UBC Thunderbird. Women's volleyball, they are a perfect 9-0 to start the year. Liz Cordonnier, quite frankly, probably their star player, will be with us. We're going to take a break. You're listening to 101.9 FM CITR Radio, Vancouver, Canada.
Yeah, the state of hip-hop right now, man, as far as the way I see it, I think right now hip-hop is advancing as far as skills. You got brothers, you know what I'm saying, getting, like, more witty.
There ain't nobody to be pretty for. Let it rattle, let the clatter kill him, let the cataclysm wash. Who really listens? Precision with a verse draws a crowd. I draw a line between an easy melody and peace of mind.
Uh-huh. You got DJs doing all kind of crazy shit on the turntables. I like where it's going, and I like, you know what I'm saying, the creative process that brothers is trying to take it to right now.
Rally Rails and Brendan Butter in the place to be. Crimes and Treasons Radio, 101.9 FM, Vancouver. CITR.ca, every Tuesday, 9 till 11.
Dynamite!
MentalBeast.com is set to release its new comedy series,
telling the riotously funny Christmas tale of a radio station on the verge of collapse.
Starting December 7th, visit MentalBeast.com to follow the podcasts and video episodes.
Each podcast will feature a brand new Christmas-themed song by one of Vancouver's hottest indie acts, while the webisodes follow the behind-the-scenes antics at this down-on-its-luck station.
The series culminates with a party at the Biltmore Friday, December 18th, and the release of the Eggnog Experience compilation CD.
Featuring holiday performances from compilation contributors Brastronaut, Machu Picchu, Fine Mist, Makeup Videotape, World Club, Needles and Pins, Analog Bell Service, Rose Melberg and Nick Hergovich, Basketball, Tight, Solid, Vancouver, and Apollo Ghosts.
And a live special screening of the final video episode of Mental Beast.
As well as CITR's own Radio Zero DJs Tyler Fedchuk and Cam Dales. So join CITR and Mental Beast at the Biltmore on December 18th.
All the proceeds from the Mental Beast Project and Eggnog Experience compilation album will be donated to the Vancouver Food Bank.
Hi, this is Burt Reynolds. You listen to Wiener's Barbecue, and they're not giving me a damn thing for this.
Mr. President, Mr. Immigration Man, won't you let me in, sweetie?
everybody. Welcome back to Wiener's Barbecue here on 101.9 FM, CITR Radio, Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada, every Tuesday from 4:30 to 6 p.m. With us on the line right now from the perfect 9-0 UBC Thunderbird women's volleyball team, an outstanding start to the first half of the season. The two-time defending national champions have played 29 sets in their nine matches. They have won 27 of those sets. One of the stars of the team, Liz Cordonnier, with us online. Liz, how you doing?
Pretty good, thanks. How are you doing?
I'm okay. It's too cold today, though.
Yeah, it's pretty cool.
I didn't dress for it.
I did dress for it. I'm running my ski pants.
Ah, you're going ski pants, hey?
Yeah.
See, I'm going with, like, flimsy khakis and everything, so yeah. It's not working out for me. I do, though. The bald head will always keep you prepared in the cold. I do have a toucan. I do have a toucan.
That's good.
Because the bald person has several toques. Who lives in Canada, I'm sure, right?
Yeah.
What do you mean? How would you know?
Well, I can only imagine.
You can only imagine.
Yeah, as a person that actually has a large amount of hair, I don't own that many toques, but, like, so I can understand.
So you're bragging. You're bragging that you have a full head of hair to me.
No, I'm just saying if really? I was bald, I think I'd suffer.
Probably what? It is. It may be wrong to say in this politically correct time, but easier for a guy than a girl. I will say that.
Okay.
You didn't back me up on that one. with us on the line, Liz Cordonnier from the UBC Thunderbird women's volleyball team. Are you studying at all? Are we into that? Or
yes, I'm actually. This is my study break right now.
This is your study break? Because I always wonder this part. Well, I never do, but it crossed my mind today. The fifth year players. You're fifth year, and you go to school for four. That's sort of how some people do their degree. So
yeah.
As a fifth year player, you kind of get to spread it out. Are we in graduate program right now? What did we do here?
I spread it out. It's pretty difficult to take a full course load when you're playing like 20 hours of volleyball a week. So most of us take four and four each term, and that works out to equaling 5 years.
Okay. I'd say you're a complainer, but I was not a good student at all, so I won't say anything. Liz, tell us about your team, 9-0 to start the year. You're the number one ranked team in the country, two-time defending national champions. As I said, you've only lost two sets out of 29 this year. Quite frankly, I mean, you know, when you put all those together, it really can't be much better than that, can it?
No, and it's been a lot of fun this first half, too. We've just been, our last couple weekends especially, we've just really come together as a team and have kind of, it's been putting on a bit of a show, actually, just seeing who can hit hardest. It's been really fun.
Is this in practices, games, everything, hey?
In games and practices as well, but games have been especially fun. Our team is a bunch of players that are real gamers and get really excited to compete, so we play our best in games and have a lot of fun.
So I guess the question there is, who hits the hardest? Who won that competition?
I think our hardest hits probably come from our middle player, Jen Hinza, or our right side player, Kyla Ritchie. They're pretty strong girls, so.
You're not in that.
I'm probably pretty close.
Yeah.
I don't know.
You're being modest, hey? You don't want to say you're the best.
We'd have to average it out probably, but I'm not sure.
Okay. Maybe we could do something the second half of the year. I could try to return the spikes.
Okay.
Or something like, and I could just judge which one like hurt me the hardest. Challenges for you guys in the upcoming season, because you know you're not, as I've already said, you're undefeated at the break here. But I'm told that the schedule gets much harder the second half of the year.
Right. Yeah. The first half of the year wasn't as challenging, and the second half we come up against some really good teams like U of A, who I think they're second in Canada West right now, as well as Calgary. They're always a good feisty team, and we're actually playing Montreal, they're not in our conference, but we'll see them at Nationals. So they're going to come over at Christmas time, so we'll get to see what they're like this year. They'll probably be our biggest competition.
Oh, so you play Montreal, currently the second-ranked team in the country there. So you're pretty much playing for that number one ranking in that game.
Yeah, well, those are just, that's sort of a training camp that they're coming over for.
Yeah.
So they don't, they're sort of in the same boat as us. They wanted some more competition back at East. They don't have as many strong teams, so they wanted to play against us before Nationals.
Right. So you are going to play an exhibition game against them?
Yeah, we'll play a couple for sure.
Just so that could matter for rankings, though. I don't know how it works. It would in basketball, at least. I don't know how it would work in volleyball.
Yeah, I don't think it does for our league, but... Yeah, in terms of it, because they're just, you know, they're outside of the league matches. But
The game that you guys really got pushed in the first half of the season, Trinity Western on Halloween, it was a five-setter. That's the one game you guys have lost any sets at all. You lost two in that one game. Did something go wrong that game? Was it just a great match and you were tested and you came up on top? Because that's really the only time anybody's come close to beating you guys. What happened in that game versus Trinity on Halloween?
Well, first of all, they played really well. They were awesome. They had a left side for them that was just kind of really exposing our defense. But it was early on in the season as well, and in past years that probably would have gone much worse. You probably would have lost because our team usually doesn't like put everything together until the second half of the season. So, but it was definitely a great game to play because that was the biggest challenge we've had so far in term, and it always builds character when you have tough matches like that. So, yeah, they played great. We maybe didn't play our best, but we fought it out anyway, so it's good.
So it's a case, I mean, you talk about how the team's having so much fun, and I actually asked your coach, Doug Reimer, this a couple weeks ago, is this a case where now that you guys have sort of won the two national titles that you do have a different feel to you at this point as a unit? You know, you do have that confidence that you know maybe you're going to win now, or?
I think so. I think we know how to win now, which is a big difference from a couple years ago. Like, when you get into those tough matches, you're never really sure how to make yourself perform, or you know, you're worried about what the team's gonna be like in those situations. But I think now that we've got all that experience under our belt, this is probably the most mature team that I've played on for a long time. So in terms of just like steadiness and mental stability, I think that's gonna be a big advantage for us.
What can go wrong with this team? What do you guys really have to avoid doing?
Hurting ourselves. Injuries is always a big one.
That's really you in particular, isn't it, Liz?
Sure, but other people get hurt too sometimes. So that's the main thing, I think, avoiding other conflicts with school and stuff. It gets pretty stressful right around playoffs because we miss 2 weeks of school, so making sure everything's balanced in that aspect. But in terms of anything that can go wrong, I think it's just it's all in our own court right now.
There you go. So avoid slipping on a sheet of ice during the December January season, hey?
Exactly.
Don't catch a cold. That's why you've got the ski pants on, hey?
No swine flu.
I might have had it. I might have had that, you know.
Really?
Yeah, I was out for a good week and a half with a flu.
Oh, you didn't get your shot?
No, I didn't get... Well, the story, if now that you've opened a window here, and I'm on the radio, so I'm gonna. You ready for about a 30, 40-second story?
Sure.
Okay, thank you. I have Crohn's disease, it's called, and every 8 weeks, I have to go to a clinic downtown, and I go for a treatment. I go for an IV drip. So I couldn't get my shot 2 weeks before or 2 weeks after the treatment. There was a month there I couldn't get it. So I was going to get it, and in that time, I caught the flu. Isn't that a good story? Isn't that a good reason?
Yeah, that's too bad. I feel like the flu took advantage of you in your time.
Well, you know what? I was on the Tamiflu, the pill they gave me. So I don't know if I had it, but I will say this. If I did have the swine flu, I was mightily disappointed in it.
No, it didn't put up much of a fight.
No, it wasn't so great. I mean, you know, only one night of throwing up, Liz. I need more than that. I need more than that out of a good flu.
Not really graphic.
Well, why not? Why not? Your sister was a top player here at UBC.
Yeah.
She never won a national championship here.
No, she came pretty close.
You've won two. Do you bug her about it?
No, I don't have to. She feels pretty bad about it, I think. In fact, we were running tryouts for a local volleyball club last night, and it came up that she was coaching, and so was I, and they were talking about it. We had to explain our situation, our accolades, what year we're in, and she mentioned that she only had silver medals. So
she only had what?
She mentioned that she only had silver medals, so I think it's pretty... it's a sticking point for her, I think, a little bit.
Did you get silver medals your first 2 years here? Or?
My first year, I got a silver medal.
Okay. Do you even have that anymore?
Somewhere.
Somewhere. Eh?
Yeah.
It's not as cool, though, is it, eh?
No.
Oh, you sound so sad for your sister.
I kind of am, yeah, because especially that year, my first year, they had a good team, and they probably should have won it, but...
Oh. What can you do? Not your problem.
Not really, I guess.
You've got two. You're looking for three. I saw your sister the other day.
Oh, yeah?
I saw her at the Yaletown Brewery, and she says she's starting a new job where she goes to work at 4 in the morning or something.
Yeah, that's right. Working for Global, so...
Yeah, there you go. What I'd like to ask you, Liz, when you come on the show, you know where I'm going here.
Okay. Oh, yeah, I do know where you're going here.
All right. Last time I saw you, by the way, your coach, Doug Reimer, he's great at it. He always takes his daughter to an animated film. He saw Up during the summer.
Yeah.
Okay. You told me you saw Zombieland and that it was awesome. I still have not seen that, but I really, I know, I really want to. You got any other movie picks for us in the last month? Anything?
Oh, man. I don't know. I've been kind of studying the last month, but I've heard that from my whole family who went and saw it just the other night that Blindside is really good.
Blindside?
Yeah.
That Sandra Bullock movie?
Yeah, my dad said he even cried.
Oh, God. Okay, where I'm going to let you off the hook here is you personally haven't seen it.
I haven't seen it.
Okay, because I'm not going to recommend that to anybody.
Okay.
Blindside.
It's a true story, though.
Based on a true story. Remember that in those cheesy films. Based on a true... I'd like to see the dinner table conversation transcripts to see if those actually matched. You know?
That's a good point.
I don't know. I can't make myself go see that one. I can't do that. You're going to go see Blindside?
No, the next one on my list is, well, I want to see Avatar, and I want to see Sherlock Holmes, the new Sherlock Holmes. So.
Oh, the Robert Downey Jr.?
Yeah.
See, now you have a better taste than your dad. I'll go that. Your sister saw that, too? She liked Blindside also?
Yeah, I think she liked it.
Wow.
Hey, have you seen it?
No, I haven't seen it.
Okay, well, then...
Why would I, though?
Maybe it'll surprise you.
Did you see The Proposal with Sandra Bullock and Ryan Reynolds? Or
yeah, I did see that. I liked the dog in that movie.
I never saw that one either.
Oh, the ending wasn't that great. But
so you liked that one? That was a box office hit. That was a box office hit.
No, that was actually like pretty entertaining, but the ending was kind of lame.
I heard Betty White was good.
Yes. You
see, I can keep up. I can keep
He's
up.
Good.
Liz Cordonnier from the UBC Thunderbird women's volleyball team, a perfect 9-0 to start the season. Liz, thank you so much for doing this. Very much appreciated. And we will talk to you in the new year. Have a Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year.
Thank you. You too.
I'm Jewish.
Oh, Happy Hanukkah.
Thank you, Liz. Way to you recovered well there. Thank you, Liz. Have a good day. All right, that was Liz Cordonnier from the UBC Thunderbird women's volleyball team. A perfect 9-0 to start the season. The men's volleyball team, not as successful a first half. They're in big trouble here in the second half of the year. They currently sit with a record of 1-7 in a conference where only seven, the top seven teams qualify to make the playoffs. The seventh place team, Winnipeg, currently has 4 wins with 11 games to go. UBC has 1 win with 12 games to go. They're also behind Thompson Rivers, who has 4 wins in 10 games. So UBC men's basketball team in a little bit of a tough spot here going into the new year, second half of the season. All right, we're going to just start playing some music a little early here today on Wiener's Barbecue on 101.9 FM CITR Radio Vancouver, Canada. Big thanks to from the UBC Thunderbird women's volleyball team, Liz Cordonnier, and assistant coach from the UBC Thunderbird men's basketball team, Vern Knopp. That's all I had on today. Okay, we're going to go play some more Halloween concert. Okay, thanks for listening. Have a great day, everybody. Mike with Flexure Head will be coming on right after me. My problem last night sleeping was I got the heat up, right? And then I go to bed, and it's too hot, so then I turn the heat all the way down, and then I wake up cold. I got to just figure out a temperature. I'm still fighting. All right. That's it. I'm done. Ah! Ah! Ah!
Judge and jury walk out hand in hand. me, call me the tumbling.
Work has begun on Canada's information highway. That's the state-of-the-art network that we're told will change everything from the way we do business to the way we learn. Without getting too technical, tell me how what you're working on is different from what's available to me right now.
So right now, if you want to listen to your favorite CITR program, you need to be listening to it on your radio live or streaming over the internet live. But with CITR podcasts, you'll be able to download your favorite show and listen to it whenever you want, on your computer or on your MP3 player.
I'm just thinking about that.
I know, it's pretty rad.
For more information, visit CITR.ca/podcast. Thank you for listening, and please be kind to robots.
Hey, this is Noah from Christ on Parade, and you are listening to CITR 101.9 FM in Vancouver, BC, Canada.
Where's Matt?
Yeah!
Yeah, good evening. Welcome to the Flex Your Head Show on CITR 101.9 FM. I am your host, Mr. Steeston Mike, and I am here until 8 o'clock playing punk and hardcore for you. If there's anything you want to hear, feel free to give me a call here at 604-822-2487. That's UBC CITR. Or go by flexyourhead.net. Send us an email request or an all-ages show listing that we don't have up there already. I do have a few. There's not very much going on in the area of all ages shows, but there's a whole bunch of bar shows coming up in the future. We'll let you know about those a little later. We'll be playing some bands that we'll be playing in the next couple of weeks or so. We're also hoping to get the guys from Slingshot in studio tonight to play the new record To My Friends. They're not here yet. Hopefully they're en route and listening to the station right now. But hopefully, like I say, we'll get those guys in studio. We'll have some fun. They're always good to hang out with. We'll let you know what we started the set off tonight with. We started today's show off with the Donuts from Sweden. From the mid-90s, I think it was 1995, this record, The Age of the Circle, came out on Victory Records with the track Impure. And, of course, it was an all-female vegan straight-edge band, or at least vegetarian. I'm not sure they're vegan or not, but they did like or have all the animal rights issues and stuff like that. They were just young girls when they started, too. They were probably 17 to 18, 19 years old. A couple of them went on to be in the International Noise Conspiracy. But the Donuts put out some great records in the early to mid-90s. They're on Victory Records. Another Victory Records band ended that set off. The band was called One Life Crew. It was off Crime Ridden Society. Came out about the same time, 1995, on Victory Records. And that was the Violent Few, One Life Crew. And there's a lot of controversy about this band. Not from this record, but from records after this, where they kind of went a little... They crossed the line into like the racist side, I think. I didn't actually own anything from them from those times, so I can't really comment. I didn't really listen to them either after that. But I know there was a lot of crap going on, and people were boycotting them and calling them racists and all this kind of stuff. But this first record, One Life Crew, Crime Ridden Society, still gets played a lot in my house, and I really enjoy it. So you can also find that song on the first Victory record, or the Victory Style compilation, I believe, which is put out around 1995 as well. Once again, this is Flex Your Head on CITR 101.9 FM. We ended that band off with One Life Crew, or the set off with One Life Crew from Cleveland. There's another Cleveland band we're going to start the set off with, this upcoming one. They were around just before One Life Crew, from about 1989 to 1991. This is Face Value.